Welcome to Masters and Mavericks, the exclusive podcast show dedicated to innovation in global marketing.
Thank you.
My name is Elliot Pollack, and today we'll hear from a rising star from Sweden. Her name is Asa. How do you pronounce Asa? There's a little O on top of one of the A's.
So it's Åsa.
Åsa. So we're with Åsa Kapp, who is an executive at Pernod Ricard and the global director and CEO of Arvodka.
Correct.
So thanks a lot for being on the show. Just I'd like to try to introduce you quickly and correct me if I'm getting anything wrong. You're not your classic marketing director. Far from it. Maybe you could say that you're something of a wolf in civilized clothes. Mm-hmm. The reason I say
that
is you're a very successful global entrepreneur who's turned into a bold intrapreneur within the Pernod Ricard group. And in the next 20 minutes, we'll try to take a deeper dive into that and try to understand how potentially what you're doing may be relevant to other brands, things to think about. In today's increasingly disrupted world of customers and brands. And I'd also like to hear from you at the end some top predictions you may have for 2016 in the field of global marketing. What you think are the important things that we should be paying attention to. But first I'd like our audience to get to know you a little bit better. So could you were telling me that you recently had an accident. This might be a strange way to start, but I was fascinated by that. You told me on the phone, I'm at home right now speaking with you because I had a boxing accident.
I was boxing with my personal trainer and my shoulder dislocated. She was a little tougher than I had thought.
Yes.
Harder.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you had a dislocated shoulder, and so that must have put you out for quite a while from work.
2 days.
2 days. Yeah. 48 hours. 48 hours. And you were speaking with me on the phone during those 48 hours. Then you were back on the trail.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
No, but I dislocated the shoulder, or both shoulders actually, 20 years ago. So I don't know. I just hate having a being disabled with an arm in a sling, so I know it's getting back as fast as possible is the only way to.
Yeah,
and so it's my left arm, so, and I'm right-handed. So
right, and that was very recently. You were in Sweden. You went back to work, and then you just flew over here to London. We're in London today. We'll talk about that a little bit more, also why you're here. So you're white. This is a fighting spirit, isn't it? This is a kind of fighting spirit.
Yeah, I suppose that's. I remember when this project started. Actually, I got a new prize internally that was called Fighter of the Year. So maybe it's a theme.
Fighter of the Year. Okay, so we're with the Fighter of the Year, and I'll make sure that I don't ask questions that might get me in trouble.
I still have my strong arm.
But before we talk about what you're doing now, can you give a little bit of background before you joined Pernod Ricard? You've done a number of things, and it hasn't been going from one big company to the next.
No.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So I was born in a family of entrepreneurs. Both my parents, my brother, and even my grandparents were entrepreneurs. So I hardly knew the word employment, actually, until I was a teenager, I think. So it wasn't a surprise that I started my own business as well. And that's what I've been doing on and off, running small businesses, starting them, running them, and sold a few of them. And then I also worked a lot with innovation. Has always been a big interest of mine.
Right.
So I have two global patents, but they're quite expensive to pursue. So
yes.
I did this in parallel with my other startups.
And is there a special area that you've been focused on?
No.
So it's the
whatever.
The growing something itself. Yeah. What is the excitement? Why do you do that?
I don't know. My husband,
I mean, okay,
he gets
you grew
tired.
Up in it, you were swimming in it, but yeah. Your husband, it's
no,
tough on your
it's
husband.
It's tiring for him because, yeah. As he says, when he explains my personality, he says, you know, at the summer house, she's not the one painting the old house, she's building a new one.
Yes.
So it's tiresome too. But no, but I like building stuff. I'm not a maintainer. I don't know how
right.
you say that in English. I'm a builder. I'm a starter. I'm
yeah.
a starting point. I start things and then I rather hand over to people who are better at managing
yeah.
things, and then I move on and do
right. Well, you
new.
Know, I'm fascinated by that because I've started a few companies
I
myself,
yeah.
and currently Text Appeal, which I sold, but I'm still also very much part of it. And Newsroom, something new that we've recently created. I'm not going to talk about that today because it's about you, but it's just something that I'm always doing. Sometimes I think maybe it's just because I don't know how to work in a big company.
Yeah,
and it
yeah.
never occurred to me.
No.
Or maybe it's because the circumstances dictated.
You might be right.
I might be right.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you very much.
Because I ended up in a big company. And
well, that's my question. Now you're at
yeah.
Pernod Ricard.
Yeah.
And so how is that possible? How did you make that jump?
I don't know why they picked me in the end, but I was contacted by a headhunter and I was really tempted by being a Swede. Having been in innovation and marketing, being approached by Absolut, which is a big pride of Sweden, I was so tempted, so I couldn't resist to be part of that process.
Yeah.
And then I ended up getting the job, so I had to sort out my other businesses that I was doing. And then I started there to test it, you know.
To test it. Is it also like what you were just saying before we started? I said, this is the first time I'm doing a podcast.
Yeah.
You said, I love that.
I love
that you love podcasts.
Yeah.
No, that it's the first time and you do something you haven't experienced before.
Yeah.
Is that one of the driving reasons?
Yeah, maybe. So then I decided to get on that train. And to be honest, I realized from day one that I was not... It was not my element, really. But I really tried, and I was also, you know, impressed by them choosing me because my profile is not a typical corporate one either. So, I mean, I suppose they did that for a reason.
Yes.
And then they had to regret it for a while. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I doubt that's true. I'm actually, you know, it's always said about students the first day that they're at Harvard, for instance, they've been accepted, they're all thinking, you know, oh, that
when
was really,
find
I
out.
Probably didn't deserve that.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, they're there for a reason.
Yeah.
I'm sure they chose you for a reason.
Yeah.
And so you didn't, when that didn't quite fit the first job at Pernod Ricard, you didn't go and say, okay, I'm going to leave. Actually, something else happened, and you're still with Pernod Ricard.
No, but I did, I did my job. So I was at the brand team of Absolut, and then I was recruited over to the innovation team when they heard about my background in innovation, which is a great place to be with my background because it is very entrepreneurial. However, it's within the limits of a brand still. So, but then I started thinking of this idea, creating something new. I mean, I'm helpless. I just can't help it. It just happens.
Yes, you can't
so
help it.
I can't
not
help
helpless.
It.
You can't help it.
I can't help it.
Yes.
Sorry. So, I kept thinking about this idea, and then I started testing it internally about this new brand being both global and local at the same time.
Yeah.
Which was not an area where Absolut could really, an area that Absolut couldn't, you know, could pursue because it's made in one place in Sweden and it's a one source brand, so it can never be local to anyone but a Swede.
Yeah.
And this trend was, everything was pointing in one direction, that this trend of local production and buying local was going to be huge. And now 5 years later, I mean, we know it's here and it's probably here to stay.
So what you're saying is that today's customers, people have a big appetite for things that don't, that are not standard and uniform, some global standardized products, but that there's a big appetite for authentically local.
Yeah, we know products. That there are a group of people that are not necessarily attracted by these big global brands that look the same and appear in the same way everywhere. So I started working on this idea and I tested it on my boss, I remember, internally, and she was like, well, I mean, I like the idea, but you know, this can never be done within Pernod Ricard. I can't see how we could pull it off.
Yeah, the last time someone said that can't be done, Elliot, I started the business. So is exactly. That what happened?
So I'm glad, I'm grateful to her for that, because that gave me more fuel on my my fire, or my urge to do this. Yeah. So I went outside, actually. I tested the idea on a few guys outside of the company, entrepreneurs that I knew. And they loved the idea. And I said, guys, I don't have any money, I don't have any resources, nothing. I just have a great idea, I think, and a lot of energy for it.
Yeah.
But that's it.
And so they bought in. What is the idea? Can you explain
it? Yeah, so the idea is to build a global brand built by local partners in cities around the world. So what we do is that we build local distilleries, we make the whole capital investment, so our vodka is the brand, and we build local distilleries in cities around the world. We make the capital investment, and then we hand over keys to local entrepreneurs who we then let them run the business and the local brand as they feel best suited for their city. So I use a metaphor of adoptive parents, as if we wanted one to grow up as a, if we had 5 kids or 10 kids and they were 10lings, you can easily see that they are siblings, the bottle looked the same, but we would want one to grow up as a Londoner, one as a Detroiter, one as a Seattleite, and so forth. I mean, I'm from Stockholm, I don't know how to raise a Londoner.
Yeah.
So this is why we look for adoptive parents in each city, as we call them, to take on our little baby and to raise them in the way that it's
and who are these adoptive parents? Is this a global corporation that's saying, oh well, now we're going to do a little bit of local and we'll hire some people and make it local?
I think
they have a special profile. When I said our podcast series is called Masters and Mavericks, you said, well, maybe the word that we should use here are maniacs.
Yeah, exactly. No, but so these guys that we look for in each city, they are successful entrepreneurs in their cities. They're born in their cities. They love their cities. They have ran successful businesses already. And what they do when we come to them is that they take on our vodka, or our London, as it's called in London, under their umbrella of their already existing network and businesses that they run.
Yeah.
So, and then we share profit with them. So they're not employed by us, they're not paid to hold our bottle for a couple of months and then move on to hold someone else's bottle, which is the way it very often works. This is a marriage, you know, we're in it together for the long run. So we, like I said, we make the whole capital investment, but they make the time investment and also sweat equity, and of course they come with their local credibility as well. So during the ceremony, I hand over the keys to the distillery to them, and after that we've been training them before the opening. We train them, we set up the supply chain, the business, the entity, everything around the business, and then we train them on everything, and then they do their thing.
Yeah, well, I took a taxi to come here in London. We're in Hackney now.
Yeah.
And the taxi driver said to me, why would people start a venue for vodka in a place that nobody can find?
Yeah.
why do you think that is?
There's a few reasons. First of all, we like to think that we together with our partners, I must say, we try to get a sense of where it's going to happen next.
Yeah.
So I like to think that this is going to be a very good place to be. It's also a fact that we don't have a big budget. It's a startup budget. So very often we end up negotiating with very greedy landlords.
Yes.
Yeah. In greedy areas with the, places that we need to renovate and work with a lot before we can move in.
Yeah, so what you're saying is when you're a startup is very different from launching a new brand in a global group, but that is not based on startup structures in the different countries. And startup in each city, you have to fight.
Yeah.
And what advice would you give to people who are maybe working in big corporations, have fantastic skills and ambition, and then say, well, I'm going to go and start up? Any learnings you have from this experience or previous experience?
I have a lot of experience.
Yeah, well, what's the biggest challenge?
Yeah, I think you have to be extremely persistent, and you can't be afraid of losing your job. I don't think I was on the list of the most popular employee every month.
Yes.
But I'm still around.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you have to be extremely persistent. And you have to learn how to navigate the corporate world. So coming from being an entrepreneur, I must say for me, it's way harder to be an intrapreneur than being an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Because in the corporate world, working as an entrepreneur or intrapreneur, you have to learn how to navigate that world as well. So it's twofolded. I mean, you need both sides, which is hard. So I'm never going to be as good. I mean, I used to like the metaphor of a horse. A horse can learn to swim. It can never be super good at it, but
right.
It can still swim.
Right. So you're
That's
saying
where I'm at, where I am in the corporate.
You need a certain level of basic skills to navigate in the large corporate world,
yeah.
And then you need the persistence,
yeah.
And the grit of an entrepreneur,
yeah.
And you need to be able to work with other people in different cities who have that same drive,
oh, yeah.
And grit, and so forth. To me, it seems this may be relevant to many global brands today, and maybe more today than it was in the past. Mm. If you look at new brands emerging like Uber, Airbnb, highly disruptive brands, and all the previous, you know, the Googles and so forth that came before that, and have massively changed many, many international businesses that thought perhaps that they were untouchable.
Mm.
I was speaking to a head of marketing recently, global marketing from a very big corporation, and he said the biggest challenge they have is digital transformation, and maybe in 5-10 years their company would not exist if they don't change the way they think and have an intrapreneurial way of approaching things.
Yeah, I heard somebody say this morning that every industry needs an Uber. And I think, you know,
But isn't that scary? I mean, how will people have to adapt to that within these corporations?
I think it's good also.
Right.
That we, you know, and it's not for everybody. It's not that the global brands, I mean, they're going to disappear or anything. But it's just that people, young people come with different preferences. And everybody's not the same. And I think that is a big learning for me, at least, with this, with our vodka, is that I have so much respect for the local aspect of the brand that we have. We have all these 5 kids now, as of today, and they're different, and they grow. I mean, these brands will be developed in cities by people from that city, and I think that's going to make the whole difference for people who are from here. Because if we had just employed people here to do the same thing as we know work in Sweden, it would not be relevant to those people here in London.
Yeah, well, every brand today is saying they want to be authentic. They have to have an authentic tone.
Authentic to what?
Authentic, I don't know.
That
they have to be perceived, I suppose, in social media in particular, as having a voice that's not a corporate voice, because people don't necessarily trust brands so much, but a personal voice that's distinctive to that brand, but also authentic, whatever that may mean. Is that just lip service in many cases, and isn't being authentic not just the way you speak, but also what you do?
Mm. Well, I think so. I mean, it's. I think, like I said, you quoted me on the Maniac. The thing that we do with all these entrepreneurs, having them run our businesses, it's not an easy thing.
Mm.
It's not like we took a shortcut. This is really a crazy bunch of people, and they're used to doing their own thing, running their own show and everything. And now we have to collaborate, but they're very collaborative people.
Right.
You know, they build things with other people. They work with we. We build things together. 1+1 is 3. And I think this is what we see. You know, we can do anything with this. We meet once a year. So in February, we were in Detroit. All the entrepreneurs from all the cities. So it's two from every city, 9 cities we have in the pipeline, all in all. And you know, they got along so well, and we could have put anything in front of them to solve. These are people that solve things, and like you said before, they're used to do new stuff. Is what they live from. So I'm so excited to see what the future
it's so exciting,
but I don't know.
No, but that's part of the excitement. Yeah. And I guess as an entrepreneur, you know that you can fail. If you fail, that's a way of learning, and yeah. You know you can succeed, and if you succeed, it might be very big, and yeah. It might be a kind of positive disruption. Yeah. Because this model seems to me, which is simultaneously global with global support and highly local with local entrepreneurship, and brands that are both all linked together internationally, but again, all separate and have their own individuality, like children that you were saying, it's not exactly any of the models that we've seen. We've seen global brands that have been highly global and consistent around the world, Apple, maybe Absolut, but with some local execution and local variation to make it relevant to the local market, but still it's coming from sort of a master template, and it's not entrepreneurial so much on the ground.
That's not the point.
And we're also seeing brands that are very local and let their local operations operate in different ways with their own P&Ls, but are still and this is both. This is combining both, and that's something I'm a huge advocate of. Not global versus local. Should you be more global or should you be more local? But global times local, which today's social media allows. Which means that what our London brand is doing can be spread all around the world, and people can instantly tap into it, and all the different cities can reinforce each other with their diversity. So it is by nature global, and at the same time it's hyper local. And if you multiply the two together instead of adding them, you get something that's maybe more powerful.
I really think so.
Now, this is still somewhat of an experiment for Pernod Ricard. I don't think that they took much risk in doing this with them, because it actually, I think they're diminishing their risk of the old way of doing things becoming irrelevant and experimenting new ways that maybe other brands, do you think, might follow somehow this pathway? Or is it unique?
No, I hope. I do. I met with IKEA, the leadership team of IKEA, the other day, and also H&M are interested to talk to me. And I love to share our experiences. Now, building distilleries is quite complicated because it's a safety, it's a lot of safety matters, but also alcohol has always been controversial with taxes and so on. So, but in other industries, I think you can do this in a more simpler way, even. Right. And I know, I've been looking for 5 years now to see if someone else has done something similar so that we could learn from someone else. But I'm sure there is someone, but we haven't come across anyone yet.
Right. So I think everybody needs to take away from this conversation, watch the space, and watch how this evolves, because this is a learning experience, and you're opening the way for all of us in the field of global branding and how to make brands locally relevant. So can you tell me now where we are today and why today is an important day for you?
So today we're in Hackney, Spurstow Road, and we're here to open our London.
So this is the launch for our London.
Our London is launching tonight. It's a private party, but from tomorrow and onwards it will be open. And through the website ourvodka.com you can find the London, their website, and see where you can buy our London. And there will also be a lot of events here. As you can see, there's an event space here. There's a ping pong table and you can hang out. So I think the bar will also be open for events and things like that. You can see the distillery through the glass. I don't know if you saw that.
It's an amazing space, and you instead of trying to you can't see it on a podcast, so that means you have to come, and then you can tell your friends and you'll have bragging rights. It's a very, very exclusive and rare kind of place. So I encourage everyone to come here and experience it.
Me too.
And then if you go to to Detroit, you can experience it there as well.
Yep.
And it's a different experience
time. Yeah.
Can you tell us just a little bit how different the experience is?
Yeah. So Berlin has been open now for 2.5 years. So they are very, I don't know, but they came from fashion. So
right.
In Berlin, you can buy our Berlin in every single lifestyle store there is in Berlin. It's become a huge lifestyle brand. And we also became very big in the airports there. It turned out that people really want to buy it as a gift to bring home from Berlin, since we carry the name of the city. Detroit has been open for a year now. They are social entrepreneurs, the two ladies that run, Sarah and Catherine. So they are very much into getting the city back on its feet.
Yeah.
So they do a lot of support for young entrepreneurs in the city, where they can come and work from out of the tasting room there. And they also host a lot of nonprofits that can do their events at our space, among a lot of other things. And then we have our Seattle that opened in spring this year. And they are, it's too early to say, but we have two really, really interesting guys running that space. And then our Amsterdam opened just a couple of weeks back.
Okay.
They're from the advertising agency.
Oh, really?
Or World. So
yeah.
They used to run a couple of agencies. They still do. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what they felt that they just really wanted to do something different this time. And not compromising, but running their own thing.
So in a sense, and that's something close to my heart, that this is all about culture, it seems to me, and not lip service to culture, but culture the way we live, where we live, what we believe, how we behave, and so forth. And you're trying to match, it seems to me, the culture of people who could be potential people who come and enjoy the brand with who they really are.
Yeah.
And to me that seems somewhat of a holy grail for brands.
Yeah.
Perhaps in the future culture will be more and more important for businesses and brands to understand so that they can match and be true to what customers' expectations are.
Yeah, I think so.
I'd like to finish on this. On the question of 2016.
Yeah.
So now you've done this in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But if we look more generally, what do you think that global brand and people in marketing at global brands really need to be thinking about for next year? Maybe two or three things that you think will be important, new trends, or things that will be potentially disruptive.
Mm. Well, doing our vodka, you know, I really believe we are we're onto something at least. And my just how we've been received in the cities where we're open now tells me this. But I also I do a lot of speeches now or lectures, and I can see, or I really believe that the young people of today, they are not only, they start to care more and more and more about the local community, but at the same time, they're also thinking beyond borders of countries.
Yeah.
Because of social media, they have friends all over. Maybe they've never met, but they still socialize globally.
Yeah.
And this is, we provide them with something that they can identify them with. We are also global and local at the same time.
Yes.
And there's a network between the distilleries. We already have people traveling from, I saw on Instagram today that there are people who came to all the four cities that are open now that are coming here.
Wow, passionate.
Because they want the fifth, they want to visit the fifth one.
Yeah.
And then we have Los Angeles, New York, Miami, and Houston in the pipeline for next year.
So you think that's an important thing maybe for everyone to think about, the fact that on internet people are connecting globally, and that's something that a brand can leverage, whether it's in the way that you're doing it or for different business objectives.
Just being both local and global.
Being both local and global, and it's not an and or, it's not a global or local.
No.
Equation,
no.
But global and local, or global times local.
Yeah, exactly. That,
okay.
I like that.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. I know it's a busy day, and I'll let you get back to
the
cleaning preparation.
The
yeah, you have to do everything when you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah. Exactly.
And have a very successful launch this evening.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.